Activist Guide to Economic Justice with Les Leopold on Saturday, November 23rd from 7 to 9 p.m. at First Unitarian Church in Portland. Les Leopold co-founded the Labor Institute. He's in Portland to talk about his latest book, Runaway Inequality, an Activist Guide to Economic Justice. Again, that's Runaway Inequality, an Activist Guide to Economic Justice with Les Leopold on Saturday, November 23rd from 7 to 9 p.m. at First Unitarian Church, 1211 Southwest Main Street in Portland. More information can be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is also available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Board meetings will be conducted at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The KBOO Board of Directors meets the fourth Monday of the month, starting at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held.
Hey, good morning. Good morning. This is KBOO 90.7 on your FM dial here in Portland, Oregon. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show. But today, Abe Proctor, my partner, is not here. It's just going to be me, Joe. And you can call us at 231-8187. There is so much going on. I have to admit, I've been paying a lot of attention to MSNBC. I know that's traitorous, but I can't help it. And I've been paying a lot of attention to the New York Times, another example of establishment possible truthiness. I have to take a deep breath here because it's all so amazing. My first question for any of you is Trump in the hospital? And if so, why? Did they just put him in hospital to take away his cell phone or what? I mean, is the guy sick or dying or having a physical like he claims, which kind of makes no sense? I don't know. If you have an idea, if you know the answer, you might want to give us a call as well. And I certainly want to hear from you. There's so very much scary stuff going on. First of all, the Trump impeachment effort continues apace. What it turns out to be is when you open the door of opportunity to all of the bureaucrats and all of the hardworking people in the State Department, not counting Pompeo, etc., you suddenly discover that there's a lot of people who are a lot of concerned. Yesterday, we were treated to the incredible image, well, I guess, I don't know, attractive image of what's her name? Maria Bolina, is that her name? Yeah, that's right. In Russia, being greeted with flowers and praise and beautiful happiness. And she did her year in jail here as a sort of spy person, and now she's there and everything's wonderful. And when we pay attention to her at all, we discover she had close connections both through a partner, boyfriend here, and others. He, by the way, is copping a plea for various crimes. We discover that, you know, somehow she was very much involved with the National Rifle Association and others and had influence in the election. No surprise. I think it's really important to understand, and this is something that a lot of people don't grasp, and it's weird. This is nothing like any election that we know about in American national politics before. Used to be when the old Soviet Union was around, there was a lot of concern about red influence. in politics. And what that really meant was policies supporting more socialist approaches, social democratic approaches to things like healthcare and so on, which have made a cycle and coming around again. But all of that collapsed with the Soviet Union, and instead, all the goodies in Russia were given away to the oligarchical establishment. And Putin, who probably is one of the richest men in the world, and now Russia clearly is attempting to control or influence, at least influence, elections in this country. It's scary, but it's true. And it's not going to change, I'm afraid. We have an administration run by a president who is an interesting combination of opportunism, ignorance, arrogance, and I don't know, deafness to the world. And interestingly enough, weirdly enough, on Saturday, he went, I can hardly believe this, he went into the hospital for a physical, only it was like, that's every year, but this is 8 months into his term, and he's there for a two-part physical. Which part is it? I suggest that they simply want to take away his cell phone, because he does nothing but mess things. I'm anxious to talk about a lot of different stuff today. With Abe gone, I'm going to feel a little free. I have to tell you, that there are so many things going on. What happens when you attempt to look at the strange politics of today? The notion of a free and open election, always a question anywhere, and certainly a question in many states. Remember that we have elected this president with a minority of support for him in the popular vote, and we have a system which essentially supports, and this was put in place by a very, really conservative bunch of people who wrote the Constitution, to keep him, to keep the presidency in the hands of people who were more likened unto the legitimate structure of the society they wanted. This has led, paradoxically, to a less than fair electoral process. And you know, I'm kind of excited about this election. There are two candidates who are clearly calling for a better healthcare system. Now, the irony of this is that Elizabeth Warren has made the classic error of being too specific in her description. Strategically, the way I think it works in America is you generalize. You don't say, we're going to do away with the whole insurance industry, or we're going to change the whole system for retirement to be a different kind of system for healthcare delivery. You don't do that. What you say instead is, we will build in the next few years healthcare for all, and it will be part of your tax, your taxation, and you add, if that isn't enough, we will also tax the hell out of the very, very, very rich. That's plenty. Elizabeth Warren has made a decision to be specific about health care. And likewise, so has Bernie Sanders. That is, when you get to that level of specificity, people become frightened. And of course, the insurance industry becomes terrified. So you gain another set of enemies. There is ample evidence that generalities win, specificity loses. So I'm kind of interested in your thinking about that particular phenomenon, and also about what's going on with the president. And on top of all that, don't we have enough evidence that the president is a, what do we want to call it, agent of Russia? agent of Russia? Or are we just saying, oh, you know, he's just naive or something? I want to hear from you. 231-8187. Harry, you're on the air.
Greetings, Joe, and thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
You were talking about Trump going to the hospital.
Yeah.
I watched this podcast called The David Pakman Show, and they were saying that he probably had a panic attack. This show also mentions that he seems to be on uppers, Sudafed. And
Sudafed isn't an upper.
It's amphetamine.
I don't think so.
Yeah, I think it is.
Okay.
Anyway, so that's what he, they're saying that he was on. He probably had a panic attack, and the idea that his checkup isn't supposed to be for a few more months. So something happened. So they'll never tell us. But he also mentioned that not last Saturday, the Saturday before. When the hearings first started, he tweeted 83 times on Saturday. 83 times? What about his job as president? I mean, this is a Saturday, of course, but still, you know. But anyway.
Well, why a panic attack? I don't think the guy, I think the guy is manic, but I don't know about panic.
Yeah. Yeah, but also something happened for the last 3 weeks. Like I said, a lot of things have been going on. One thing is I thought Biden was through, because what happened 3 weeks ago was he was campaigning in South Carolina.
Uh-huh.
And he went to the Catholic Church, and they refused him communion because of his stance on abortion.
Wait a minute. This sounds like idle gossip. I don't even think he's Catholic.
Yeah, he is. Biden is.
Oh, Biden. Sorry. Yes, Biden is Catholic.
Yeah.
And they refused him communion?
And most of the progressive news stations didn't mention it at all. I assume this was a grave, the idea that the priest refused him, but it would hurt his standings with Catholics around the country. But it hasn't.
Well, let me, Harry, say this about the electoral process. Most people, even in this scary time, don't like to pay and probably are not paying much attention, especially at this stage of the process for the 2000 and so on. This is too early for most people. As to the question of communion and all that, I don't know. Is this reliable? Is this true?
Yeah, it's true, and the idea was, and I thought it would make a big thing. In fact, so much so that that's when was the ex-mayor of New York, David, I can't think of his name right now.
That's all right. Don't think of his name. We can live without it.
Okay, but he's decided to run for president.
Yeah, I know.
Because
you're talking about Bloomberg, right?
Bloomberg, yes. Bloomberg smelt blood, so he decided, oh, I'm going to jump into the race now. And with Bloomberg thinking, just because of thinking of going to the race, he's got 5% of the 5% of the vote versus all the other candidates have like 1 or 2 or 3%, you know.
Well, the top 3 or 4 have more than that. But the thing to remember, and this is really important, is it's so early in the process. The Democrats deciding to have these debates and doing them the way they've done them creates a sense of chaos and a sense of looseness in the process. In the old days, that's like when I was very young, the conventions decided who was the candidate, and that was finally done away with, and now we have a more popular process. But right now, everybody's in Iowa arguing their case in Iowa, and Iowa is, it's the heartland, it's the flyover state and so on, but it's not California, it's not New York, it's not Texas. You get the idea?
Yes.
So it really maybe doesn't foretell any outcome in terms of who the candidate of the Democrats is. I really think that we all ought to be backing off of that. It's blather, it's meaningless news, but the thing that is most important, perhaps, is the tell that comes from the fact that the two candidates who are most clearly advocates for health care as a social democratic right are being attacked and blasted and have made the insurance industry terrified. That's what I think is interesting about it all.
Yeah. Well, one last thing.
Yeah,
what
sure.
What do you, I, Bernie Sanders, Bernie's, and Trump, and I can't think of her name, have in common?
Wait a minute. You can't think of Elizabeth Warren's name?
Well, Elizabeth Warren. Okay. What do we all have in common? We all get a Social Security check.
Well, the other thing we have in common is we're all white. No, that's not funny. That's important.
No, well, except for me, I'm African-American.
Oh, I beg your pardon, man. You're just a voice.
Yeah, okay. shout out.
Shows you what I know. Anyway.
Abe. Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, shout out to Abe. Tell him he needs to work harder to support all of us who are on Social Security.
Okay, I will get him on. I will get him on the line, working harder. I want to thank you, and I apologize for my making assumptions.
Yeah. Okay. Right. Thank you very much. Talk to you later.
Okay. Bye. Bye. Okay. I want to go out to an old friend who has some local information. Sandy, are you there?
I am. Hi. Good morning.
What's up?
There is so much going on this week. There are so many opportunities for people to get involved and try to make the world a better place.
Okay, not just make trouble, but make a better place?
Absolutely. For instance, today, I think probably many of your listeners have heard about our local big shot ambassador, Gordon Sondland.
Yes.
Who he's not just the ambassador to the EU because he gave $1 million to Trump.
He gave $1 million to Trump for the inauguration, the famous fantasy
that's
money.
That's right. He didn't get on board until Trump was elected. Previous to that, he was against him, but once he was there, he decided to buy himself an ambassadorship. So, it didn't turn out exactly the way he hoped. Anyway, he has now testified twice, that I'm aware of, about Trump's extortion scheme in Ukraine.
Ah.
And he perjured himself the first time, and now there's been more testimony. It sounds like he still wasn't saying the truth the second time, but he gets another chance tomorrow.
So you think that he eventually will evolve into an honest man? Is that the idea?
Well, a lot of people in town are going to come out today, this afternoon, to let him know that that's what we think he should do. We have a unique responsibility being Portlanders, and an opportunity to make it clear to him that we expect him to come clean and tell the full truth when he testifies tomorrow before Congress. So we're going to meet in front of one of his more familiar hotels is Sentinel.
Ah.
It's 614 Southwest 11th, which is 11th and Alder.
Okay.
And we're going to be there 4 o'clock this afternoon for a little demonstration, protest between 4 and 5. It's going to start there, and I'm not sure exactly when, but they're going to walk a few blocks over to the Dozier Hotel and the Woodlark Hotels. Those are two of his others. So it's half his hotels in town. He has 6. Anyway, that's a great opportunity today. Meet some fun people. Get probably to do some little chanting and stuff.
Oh, chanting is always good, you know.
Yes. Yeah, so that's today, and then he'll be testifying tomorrow. Tomorrow morning, you may know, a couple of years ago, maybe you remember, we passed a very historic measure that limited the expansion of fossil fuel infrastructure in this city, a fabulous way to help our city do its part in trying to stop the fossil fuel industry, which is fueling climate change.
Uh-huh.
And that bill had multiple court challenges, and it survived them, but it's going back to city council for some tweets.
Tweeting.
Tweaks.
Oh, okay, okay.
Okay. Go into effect.
All right.
And its first session is tomorrow afternoon at 2 o'clock, city council at City Hall. I think probably most of your listeners know where that is. It's a good idea to wear red so that city council knows you're with the group that is supporting them in this. So that's going to be its first reading. It's not going to be until December 18th when they're planning to vote on it. But in any case, city council tomorrow afternoon at 2 o'clock. It'll go on until 5. You don't have to be right on time. You know, just get there.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a great place to do Thursday.
Wow. Busy.
That's what I said. This is a great week for people who want to make a difference. You know, you don't have to do all of them, but come do one or two. Thursday is a rally in Salem. We have been fighting that frack gas project in Jordan Cove for over a decade.
Ah, yes.
And the irony of us having to spend this much time on this and so much attention when we could be doing other things to help the world is that Kate Brown could stop it. She has the authority to stop it. And so we are meeting in Salem on Thursday. We are rallying there from 11 to 1:30, I believe, to tell her that now's the time for her to stop it. And again, you are asked to wear red. Those fighting against all this fossil fuel stuff, that is the color. It's 11 to 1:30, and therefore they are going to be, the organizers are providing lunch.
Lunch. Wait, now this makes great sense.
Tamales.
I never realized there was such a thing as a free lunch.
Yeah, there's a free lunch sometimes when you're doing good. There will be some carpooling going from the Central Lutheran Church in Northeast Portland.
Uh-huh.
9 o'clock in the morning is when that needs to happen. And that's at 20, it's on Northeast 21st, about a couple of blocks just north of Broadway.
Okay.
And that, then on Friday, something that you don't actually have to get out of your house for. This one sounds really fun. This is one calling out JP Morgan Chase Bank, because most of us, I don't think we think about this, but where does the money come from to build that Jordan Cove pipeline? It gets invested by banks, and JP Morgan Chase is the biggest funder of the fossil fuel industry in the whole world.
Wow.
And they also, Jordan Cove project is being built by a Canadian company, and Chase is the only U.S. funder of that pipeline project. And again, this is an Oregon project. So it's really...
Well, what do you want people to do?
Well, if you have a Chase credit card or a Chase debit card, or it turns out Chase is the bank that handles United Airlines cards, Amazon cards, Starbucks cards, Southwest Airlines, and others.
Wow.
Look on the back of your cards. If you see Chase, this action is for you. And what we want you to do, and it's maybe a little bit of a personal sacrifice, but hell, it's a small personal sacrifice compared to climate chaos, right?
Right.
So we want you to join the Cut the Chase Challenge, which begins Friday, What you do is you get somebody to take a video or a photo of you, preferably a video if possible, cutting up your Chase credit card. And then you're going to post it on social media. And we'd love it if you would tell us about it. And you can do that. You can go to 350pdx.org, click campaigns, and then in the drop-down you'll see Defund Jordan Cove Chase Bank. And there's ton of information there on this is a national action that we are joining in, and here in Oregon, of course, it's really highlighting the Jordan Cove act, their funding of them. But nationally, since the Paris Accords, they have invested, whatever you want to call it, over $196 billion since we signed the Paris Accords. So it's so duplicitous. In any case, this one's a really fun one, and if you go to that hashtag on the 350PDX website and click that Defund Jordan Cove Chase Bank, you'll even see scripts for what you can say in your video.
Okay.
Okay, so that's your week.
Wow, a week
tomorrow,
of actions.
Thursday and Friday. Isn't that fun?
Well, I don't know. Fun. Yeah, I guess it's fun. It's certainly useful, and I want to thank you very much for telling us about all this.
Yeah, thank you for the opportunity.
Sure. Okay, thanks a lot, Sandy.
Okay, bye-bye.
I'm just thinking about how to cut the card. I don't have a Chase card. I guess a big scissors. I don't know. I think if I was doing it, I might want to just burn it. You know, get a acetylene torch and put it in a safe container and fire her up. Never mind. Okay, let's go to the phones, 231-8187. Robbie, you're next.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah, I divested from Chase and Wells Fargo back in Occupy Wall Street when we did the massive bank leaving, but it's great effort. I'm glad to see that we can do stuff like that still. But I wanted to go back to your comments about the generalization of and the specificities, and that's how we went. I honestly disagree with you. I think that's an older thing. I think that people used to be, we're in an age of information, digital information. There's a lot of information going around. And so that's why people were asking for the specifics from Warren's plan, specifically people like me who looked at it, because I've talked to you before about Warren. I actually consider her kind of like a lawyer politician, which is just basically telling people what they want to hear in order to, you know, get votes or whatever. So when she released this, it's not Medicare for all. And the specificities of it basically look exactly like Mayor Pete's framework. And this is why she was saying she had a plan. She released it. Did you know that the healthcare stocks jumped the moment that she released this backtrack on Medicare for all? That's the facts. So I think when you say that generalizations win elections, I actually think that's how the people get deceived. And I think that's why it's dangerous to allow that type of stuff to go on. Furthermore,
Wait a minute. You understand there is free speech. I mean, you know, when you say it's dangerous to allow it to go on, I don't see how you would stop it.
Well, to be like, oh, well, she generalized her framework plan for Medicare for all, and then we support it, and then she gets in, and then it's a lie, and it's not Medicare for all. It's not exact. It's not what we were wanting, and that's what's dangerous. And I think that being allowed to be like, oh, well, you know, generalizing and specificities. Anyway, that's what she backtracked on that. So when it comes down to this, we need to be really paying attention to this. And it's not, you know, we can't, you know, it's already too late. Sanders had a very specific plan. It addresses much more stuff than, for instance, the wealth tax. It's much more comprehensive. It makes sense. Warren's tax plan, wealth tax, caps out at what is it, $500 million, and basically, so if you make $10 million or $500 million, all the way to $5 billion, you get taxed the same rate. That makes no sense. Bernie Sanders' plans make sense. But the thing that I find very sad is how much Warren is actually tied to the to these industries. When you watch the healthcare jump, the pharmaceutical stocks jumped the moment she released her plan. That's because they know that there will still be private insurance. And so I don't think it's scaring people. If you look at the support that Bernie Sanders is getting right now, I don't know if you're paying attention, but in Iowa, he's leading, which no news article is even mentioning. But he's leading. They're more focused about Pete, who, by the way, Pete B. posted a fake picture of a Kenyan woman and then put 400 endorsements and released them to South Carolina saying that he had black support.
Yeah, I thought that was weird.
Why is that not being talked about on the news? Can you imagine if
Well, it was in the New York Times.
Something like that?
I did see it in the New York Times. So.
Okay, yeah, I saw one or two articles about it too. But I'm saying imagine if a front runner who we're expected to believe Pete now is, you know, in third place or second place or whatever. Can you imagine if Bernie Sanders had gotten caught doing something like that? That would be all over the news. That's my point. My point is, though, is when you look at these candidates, there's really only one option. And that's what I really wanted to say, is because when you're talking about these generalizations, I feel that the specificities of Bernie Sanders is why they have to black him out. And that's what people like me like. So just because we live in this American world right now dominated by, you know, media, which is lying to us and covering stuff up, ironically, I find extremely hilarious considering it's like, okay, so Donald Trump, and this will tie into the second part here, of course Donald Trump's guilty. But furthermore, if we're going to say Donald Trump's guilty for, let's just say even, we'll go back to 2016, in which he said that, you know, or he wanted to dig up dirt on Clinton. Wait now. What about correct the record and Hillary Clinton's campaign doing the same exact thing? What about the fact that the media is the people that are releasing this information and influencing our votes? That's not rigging an election. Rigging an election is what the DNC and the Clinton campaign did in 2016 on the primary election. This whole thing is just so crazy to me. I feel so – am I really out of place here?
Well, what you're not out of place, and you're not wrong, but what really you need, all of us need to understand, is the electoral process has never really been representative of the interest of the people. Occasionally, there's a breakout or a breakthrough. I think
so. There's no democracy, is what you're suggesting.
Well, not in the more profound and meaningful sense. That's right. Sorry.
So. No, I mean, I get it. That's why, here's the thing. I'll explain a little bit more, if you know, about my background. I'm from Tucson, Arizona, an extremely racist and gerrymandered state. Uh-huh. I gave up on voting, and I became a direct activist. You know, I mean, voting was such a pain. If you had seen how hard it was to vote and what I had to do and just the whole process. I used to campaign for Al Grijalva. I did all this stuff through the system, and then when I saw the own Democratic Party there being manipulative, when I saw how they were in cahoots with the courts and how they are able to influence, like basically just shunt any progressivism inside the Democratic Party using that system there, I gave up on it and I turned to direct action. Okay. I came out here to Oregon and I'm like, wow, this is a really great state to vote in. It's extremely easy. I'm really excited. But to be honest, I didn't vote for Obama. I didn't vote for Obama because honestly, I saw through it. I saw his neoliberal practices, and you know, 8 years later, you know, when he was out, I was glad to say I didn't vote for him because he sold a lot of false hope. And so that's where I'm at right now. But when I look at this right here, right now, yeah, you know, like we should be voting in this state. We should be trying very hard. But Sanders is the only one with the consistent background, the specific plans. And the fact that the media has to shunt him, I don't get the difference between what Russian election interference is and what the media is doing on a mass media scale.
Well,
in America
wait. Now, there's two things going on here. I agree with both the things, except that I think it's really important to understand what I believe to be the case with Trump. And that is he's either an unconscious or conscious agent of the Russian oligarchs. And that
wait,
really
hold
different.
On, hold on.
No, that's really different than we've ever had before.
Okay, so you think he's working for Russia?
Yes.
Okay, so that's, and I was like, let's just say he is. Let's say like, yeah, he's guilty. I said, yeah, you know, quid pro quo, like, yeah, all that. But that's what you're pointing the finger at when I'm pointing the finger at our Democratic DNC 2016 election that already happened? What is the difference between Russian election interference, releasing dirt on people who are running, and the mass media shunting Bernie Sanders? Is that not election interference?
Well, I'm gonna have to let you go because a lot of people are piling up. But I think you're raising an interesting question, and I'll just quickly say, the difference is whatever the manipulation is going on within the United States, they are within the classic opportunistic structure. Russia is a country has no good intentions America.
Okay, well, let me. Can I get one final thing?
Sure. Go for it. Make it quick though.
Ukraine. Why are we in Ukraine? Is it just because they're a NATO ally? Isn't this just more interventionism that we're now supposed to go to war with Russia against? I just see.
No, I think you're raising an interesting question, and I'm going to let you go, and then I'm going to try to answer the question about Ukraine, because it's a historically significant thing. When the Soviet Union collapsed, the United States and NATO had an opportunity to neutralize all of the new republics, the new independent republics, which included Ukraine. Instead, we militarized them. That decision to directly face the borders of Russia created an enormous degree of anger and paranoia within the Russian establishment and supported the paranoia created by the oligarchs. It was a decision made in an opportunistic way, and it was very unwise. Had we used our collective national heads better and not decided to take advantage of the failure of the Soviet Union, we would have had a bunch of neutral states along the border and elsewhere in the former Soviet Union. We didn't do that. So, in consequence, this is what we're getting. Now, it's not our fault. Nothing is directly about the United States actions in Ukraine, except that I absolutely agree that the Russian attack on Ukraine needs to be countered, and at this point there's very little choice except to counter it militarily. And the fact that Trump is more interested in finding dirt on the Bidens, which I don't care about one way or the other, and that's more of concern to him than the fact that Ukraine is needing weapon systems to counter the Russians, who are actively fighting with their proxy partners in Ukraine. That's really serious stuff. Anyway, I want to go to our next caller, 231-8187. Mike, you've been very patient. You're on the air. Or maybe not.
Callers today, a lot of great callers today. You hear me?
Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah, a lot of great callers. Thanks, Kebu. Could you talk about the history and the reality of Social Security compromise with the corporations and banks and insurance companies, and really, as awesome as Medicare and Social Security is, and thank goodness for it, and hopefully we have Medicare for all sooner than later. What was the compromise function really back then, even in the 40s and 30s?
Well, actually, the 30s.
I guess my to put a point on it is really what it did was guarantee all these clients and customers and people and new revenue for the insurance companies to be mildly regulated, and then the most expensive clients, medically older people, disabled people, this and that, that really immediately need the care, they were taken off the risk assessments of the insurance companies and put on the public dole, which thank goodness for it again. But you see what I mean?
I understand what you're saying.
Okay.
Look,
it's socializing the cost and privatizing the profits.
To a great extent, you're correct. But remember that the compromises and the actual reforms that took place during the Great Depression and I have to say clear up in through the Eisenhower administration, ironically, were real reforms. And they made life better for a lot of people.
Let me finish. Capitalism.
Yes. And at the same time saved capitalism and at the same time, sadly, did not support adequately the needs of persons of color. So the whole system was, suggesting, probably racist and essentially about maintaining a capitalist system. I think in the retrospective looking at history, better to have had that than to have a massive suffering in the United States. But we could argue about that. But, you know, anyway, so I don't know enough to really be a smart guy around exactly how the whole process went down. So I'm going to pass on that. I don't like to talk about history where I'm not absolutely clear. So I'm going to let you go, and I'm going to turn on some of you. Oh, look. Hey, Jack, you're on the air.
Yes, I am. Joe, you get the nation, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Have you been following Stephen Cohen's articles about Russiagate?
Gosh, I'm not sure I have. Why don't you tell me about it?
Well, he's taken the left to task for going down another neo-McCarthyist path on this issue.
And he's pretty
outspoken about it, and he's as you may know or may not know, he is a Russia expert.
Well, I do know that.
He's been writing on Russia and the Soviet Union before the collapse. He's written in depth hundreds and hundreds of articles, and he's very well studied. And he's calling this Russiagate an exercise in depravity or insanity or whatever, getting us a new Cold War, getting us a neo-McCarthyism, and he's asking for some measure of, balance on it for people to revisit this and reconsider what's happening. So you're pushing this Russiagate, you're just not letting up on it, and I wish you would go back and read some of his articles. Maybe you've just been avoiding him because you didn't want to read this.
No, it's because I'm lazy, if anything. But I would.
There's articles in Counterpunch as well.
Okay, I think you're raising an interesting question, and I will read those articles. But I have to say, from what I'm seeing with this president, his love of dictators, his love of authoritarian leadership, and that would include Turkey, and that would, by the way, include Israel at this time, I think is clear, and it's not just about Russia. It's about a larger way of seeing the world. And I believe Trump is, I don't know what you want to call it, a neo-fascist? Yeah, I mean, he's not advocating fascism per se, but he's behaving in a way that is essentially fascist. So
probably a crypto-fascist.
Crypto-fascist. Let's go for that.
A better characterization. And yeah, if you read the people that are criticizing Russiagate, none of them are supporting Trump. They want to see him gone too. All they're saying is this ain't the way to do it. You're gonna get more trouble than you bargained for.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Neo-McCarthyism, I mean, you, we're both old enough to remember the McCarthy era. I know you don't want that again.
Right. Well, you're right, of course. Anyway, I want to thank you, and I think your point is good, and I think I will do a little more research. But from my perspective at this time, the oligarchical regime, the dictatorial regime, the murderous regime in Russia that now exists, is obviously part and parcel of a taking away the notions of left and right and so on, is obviously fascist. And I have to say that. Anyway, I want to get some other folks on. We're going to be running out of time so soon. Katie, 231-8187. Katie, you're on the air.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Sure.
I love your show.
Thank you.
So I just want to reiterate a couple of callers ago, the guy supporting Bernie. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Love Bernie. Also, I think we need to really start focusing on the DNC, not the whole Trump-Russia gate thing, because we are 3 months away from the Iowa caucus. So we really need to start focusing our energies on getting the right person in office. So if everyone could just start focusing on making the DNC do the right thing and not screw Bernie over again, that would be great.
Oh, I agree with you, and I thank you very much for the call. I think that what happened to Bernie Sanders in the last election was terrible, and I think it was a case of a Democratic Party establishment being a very, I would say, reactionary and failing to see the advantage of moving toward a progressive campaign. So, you know, thank you for the call. Let's go on with somebody else. 231-8187. Mark, you're on the air. Mark? Something's happening with the phones. I'm going to stall for a moment here because I do want to hear from Mark. I think. Okay, Mark, you're on the air. Are you on the air?
Yeah.
Great.
Yes. Good morning, Joe.
Good morning.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I want to recommend an article by Dan Rather.
I remember him.
Who warns us that the Republicans are desensitizing. And of course, the Trump involvement with Russia, the emoluments.
Yes.
The trashing of language, of departments of education, the EPA. This is all impeachable. The second point, I watched a great clip on the Laura Flanders show of the Edge of Democracy. It's about Bolivia by Petra Costa. It's about a 25-minute clip, which she also put on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
It's really remarkable and it kind of makes understandable the global revolution. The director said that the 8 wealthiest people own half of the wealth of the world. So I recommend this. I also want to recommend people check out the Louisa Flowers. It's a home forward development, the largest affordable housing development in 50 years in Portland, at 515 Northeast Holiday, right on the Max Line. It's a very impressive building, and there's a very short waiting list for seniors with $1,300 of monthly income. So it's hard to get the good news out, you know?
Sure. No, I appreciate you reminding us of some of these good events. And I also think Laura Flanders, I mean, I think she does a great job, by and large. And I really am glad that you brought that up.
I also have a couple questions. Number one, isn't it true that the United States has put bases around the Soviet Union? Number two, isn't it true that the United States promised not to extend NATO one inch to the east?
Yes, both of those are true. But remember, the bases around what you're calling the Soviet Union, now Russia, were always there. I mean, they were there from the end of World War II. And remember that the whole atomic arms race really was a response to the fact that the Russians, previously the Germans, but then the Russians, were developing nuclear weapons.
Now, our U.S. representative admitted that we spent $5 billion in overthrowing the Ukrainian government. So I hope you can research that. That is, of course, follows a long pattern. And this film, The Edge of Democracy, which is also on Netflix, can make us understand the malevolence, the viciousness, you know, and of course, the terrible brutality that the people in Bolivia, you know, are facing, and also Venezuela. I believe sanctions are a form of war, and I wish we could discuss that. I've given up on our political system because we don't deal with taxation, international law, you know, with the market distortions. So as soon as we wake up, you know, I'll be a happy camper.
Well, pardon me, I was going to make a joke about camping, but I'll pass on that. Listen, I do appreciate the call. I think much of what you're saying is true. I think we all have to be very much aware of where we are, what kind of a nation we live in, and we all have to be very much on guard against our looking for purity in a situation where there is virtually no pure struggle. I really appreciate Bernie Sanders' clarity. I'm sorry he had a heart attack. I don't know that he'll be so electable because of that. But more important than that, most people, I really believe, are totally bored and indifferent to the political process. And many, many people who make up Trump's base kind of like the fact that he's an outlaw. That's part of the tradition of the Old West, as it were. You know, it's a Wyatt Earpy kind of thing. And I think that's very sad. And I think that it's going to very much threaten our freedom. It never occurred to me prior to Trump's rise through his stupid shows on NBC, which had a big role in making him so popular. It never occurred to me that he actually would end up president of the United States. And the reason why I'm talking about Russia in that context is that I'm pretty much convinced that Russian bots and so on had a major role in either persuading people, confusing people to stay away from the polls, or actually getting people up and ready to vote against it. And I think that this is a very real threat. And I think that if we ignore it, we ignore it at our peril. And certainly this administration is going to do nothing about it. In fact, it'll probably encourage it. I'd like to hear from people. This show is a one-time thing because I happen to be alone here, but it's not atypical. And we really do welcome all opinion. So I want to call on the next person online and ask all of you who want to call to get in real quick. We got 8 more minutes at least. 231-8187. Alan, you're on the air.
Hi, Joe. Thanks for taking my call. And we love you here in our Northwest place. Just one thing that the person who follows you on the show, Teresa, was talking about last week about the fighting in the eastern part of Ukraine with the Russian paramilitary. And apparently, according to her research, there was some actually Nazi groups that are fighting for Ukraine against the Russians.
Well, that's very possible. I have a lot of respect for her and her work. I used to regularly listen to her show, which I think began with some Russian music in the old days. I don't know if she's still doing that. But I think that observation is correct. The fact of the matter is there's a vast area, which was in the old days part of the Soviet Union and part of Poland and part of a whole bunch of the countries in what's now called Central Europe or Eastern Europe, which have been labeled the Bloodlands. Because, you know, because this was the place where the largest amount, the largest number of slaughters took place, first under Stalin, and then with the Nazis and the slaughter of the Jewish people. And it's really important to understand that brutality continues at a lesser level. Unfortunately, we're seeing now a revisionist kind of look at that whole period of time. Mm-hmm. And a lack of understanding of the historical significance of it. But the label Bloodlands is not inappropriate. And I'm not doubting at all that there are neo-Nazis or Nazis actively fighting the Russians. That don't make it unimportant for us to try to limit the effort by Russia to regain all of Ukraine.
But from Russia's point of view, you could see that there is a certain fear, Nazis. They have a history, not a good history with Nazis, so...
I don't know anybody who's had a really good history with Nazis, but, you're right. I think that it's much more complex, and in the United States, we're relatively naive on this point. But I would point out that neo-Nazi philosophy is very much alive and well in the United States. In fact, much of Trump's support, I think, is based in white supremacy assumptions.
But this aid to Ukraine, is it in fact, are we giving aid in a sense to Nazis?
We're giving aid and defense to the Ukrainian government. How they spend that money, I don't know. I don't believe it has much to do with Nazis, though. But there are Nazis in the Ukraine. Okay?
Yeah. Okay. So
that's all I know. I have to plead ignorance here, and I'm less afraid
me
of
too.
Nazis. I'm like actually less afraid of Nazis in Ukraine than I am right here.
Yes.
Okay,
thank
anyway,
you.
Thank you thank for the you. Call. I want to get in some other people. 231-8187, that is. Sheila, you're on the air.
Yeah, hey, there are a couple of things. The quid pro quo in this process is the least, it's irrelevant, because what he did was to request the...
you're talking about Trump now.
Yeah, we're talking about Trump, right. The two things that are most relevant are the fact that he wanted dirt on Joe Biden, and the other thing that has not even been mentioned is that he wants Trump wanted Ukraine to show that the Russians were not behind the 2016 election,
right?
But that Ukraine was. Well, now in order, so if they can do that, then there's no reason to have sanctions against Russia, which plays right into Putin's hand and shows how much Trump is supporting Putin.
No, I agree. I agree. You're absolutely right.
But we haven't even heard anything about that.
Well,
about that
if you're looking for accuracy and good research in the mainline media, it's hit or miss. And a lot is missed. And the fact of the matter is that there is really, from the point of view of most Americans, little interest in the facts of the matter in the 16 election, little interest in what's going to be coming up in this next election. And that's very sad, but true.
But my point is that the sanctions play into Putin's hand, and it just shows more support for Russia, and it also plays into, is an advantage to Trump, because if he plays into Putin's hand and takes the sanctions away from Russia, he's going to have a better chance of getting his hotel in Moscow.
You're right. You're absolutely right. A lot of what Trump does is basically me, 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 rather than we.
Right, but he can't. But nobody. But in this investigation, they don't talk anything about the fact that Trump's trying to get rid of the sanctions against Russia.
Well, I hear it. I hear it occasionally. I also hear it. I hear it on even on TV news. I don't think it's totally ignored. I think it's not played up the way I would like to see it, and the way you would like to see it.
Right. Well, that's all I wanted to bring up.
No, I appreciate the call. I think it's important to understand both the complexities and the realities of the situation.
Yeah.
Again, in my mind, there is no question but that the President of the United States is either a witting or unwitting agent of the oligarchs of the former Soviet Union. And I think that's a bottom line fear. And I think it's valid. And I'm really sorry that so many Americans, first of all, don't really care to vote even, and that there is still a base core of people who are fundamentally racist, frightened, irrationally concerned about the wrong things, and that there is a good thing, the changing nature of the society. We now know that there is an enormous underway of trying to dismiss the legitimate interests of persons of color, including Hispanics, in the United States being carried out by this administration. I'm really running out of time here. This was very interesting. I think a lot of the calls, for that matter, all the calls, were very on the mark. And I really appreciate people being willing to call in and pay attention. And I want to urge all of you, I set up the thing with my friend Sandy because I wanted to tell you of some stuff that's going on that'll make you feel better if you show up and do what she suggested. So I want to wish you all well, and I want to urge you all to be active, and I want to remind you that it's a complex and nasty business, politics, but you got to play or you don't get to be part of the game.
From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, This is Alyssa Pariah, your friendly neighborhood agitator, the host of The Struggle, every Friday from 7 to 8 p.m. Listen to KBOO Community Radio, 90.7 FM, and online at kboo.fm. The Struggle is where organizers and activists doing good in the community come to discuss their work, to get you to support them, maybe even join them. Remember The Struggle, every Friday, 7 to 8 p.m., KBOO Community Radio.
KBOO is getting ready for our annual book and record sale.
This is a great time to clean out those closets and shelves and turn your old books, records, and CDs into cash for community radio.
Bring them to KBOO Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. till 7 p.m.
We are accepting donations of books, vinyl records, CDs, and DVDs through Saturday, December 14th. The sale will be held on December 21st. Stay tuned for details.
Your unwanted books, records, and DVDs are treasure to someone else. Help them find new homes while raising money for our community radio station, KBOO.
If you have questions or want to arrange for a pickup of donations, please email volunteer@kboo.org or call 503-231-8032, extension 213.
This is KBOO Portland, and the time is 9 o'clock. Coming up at 10, it's Flashpoints with Norman Solomon discussing Bernie Sanders taking on corporate Democrats and the Green New Deal. At 11 on stage and studio, DMA's guests are Maya Milan Gonzalez and Alexandra Mehta to talk about A Christmas Cuento. And at 11:30 on Art Focus, Joseph Galavan interviews Jordy Duckler and Mary Dawn Duckler about their pop-up library, which merges books and nature through a maximalist collection of drawings, poems, and found objects. All of these KBOO programs are made possible by member support. If you'd like to become a member, go to kboo.fm and click on Donate. And now on Alternative Radio, we hear part one of a lecture from linguist and scholar Noam Chomsky about the threats to peace and the planet.
The crucial issues